The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to talk about one of the key ways in which we can obviate holiday stress. You know, holidays are a time of year when we often tend to overeat, over and drink, overindulge a little bit. All the festivities, fun, and food can lead to bouts of indigestion, nausea, and digestive distress. And, you know, these days we highlight the importance of the microbiome. And, you know, I'm not sure if there's studies have been done on this, but I think that this time of the year is a prime time for stress on the microbiome. So we're going to focus on that with an expert. She's written several books on this subject. She is Marty Wittekin. She's a board-certified clinical nutritionist. She's been counseling for 33 years, and she's also host of Healthy by Nature, a nationally syndicated weekly nutrition talk radio show, now in its 19th year. And I always love to interview fellow nutrition talk show hosts because you can't go wrong. You know, they're going to do well in an interview. She's author of Natural Alternatives to Nexium, Maalox, Tagamet, Prilosec, and other acid blockers, and also several other books. And she has a book soon to be released, The Probiotic Cure. She's has many accolades, including Woman of the Year in Natural Foods, and she's a frequent guest on national TV and radio programs. So without further ado, here is Marty Wittekin. It's a pleasure having you on the program again, Marty, because this is a reprise. We've talked to you before. Help us introduce the subject. You know, what happens with all this aberrant eating in terms of our microbiome?
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be with you. I love having a doctor because you're able to pronounce the names of all of those drugs that are in the title of the book.
Indeed.
What happens is, I have a feeling that, just as you say, this might be kind of open season on our microbiome, our friendly bacteria that do so many jobs for us. If you believed television, and if that was your only source, you'd think that they probably just help with regularity, but that is the tip of the iceberg. They actually conduct an awful lot of the body's business chemically. And they only like really good food. And so when we bombard them with sugar and refined carbohydrates, which is what we are inclined to do this time of year, they don't like it. However, the bad critters, the ones that cause us grief, like yeast overgrowth, they are in hog heaven. So we see some immediate results with heartburn, and we can talk about that if you want to, but I have a feeling that it may take us quite a while after the holidays to kind of restore order in our gut.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you've been on the probiotic scene for many, many years, and I bet you're tremendously excited about, you know, some of the developments in probiotic science, you know, the understanding of the microbiome. Recently, I attended an opening, and I don't know if you get to New York from time to time. I know you're based in Texas, but at the American Museum of Natural History, there's an entire exhibit devoted to the microbiome and the many, many facets of its interaction with human health, not just, you know, whether you're constipated or whether you have gas or bloating or whether you have diarrhea. I mean, that's a very superficial understanding of the microbiome. There's so many new ways in which we understand it interacts. So maybe you can take us on a little bit of a tour of you know, beyond the obvious, beyond, you know, heartburn and indigestion and, gastric distress.
Well, I thought the fact that earlier in the summer that Harvard had a symposium that I did attend, I thought, well, that means it's really on the map. It was fascinating information. But now I've got a tax-deductible reason to come to New York.
Indeed. It's a write-off. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to see that exhibit. We have so many cells. We have maybe 10, 100 times more cells that belong to bacteria than we do of our own cells. But even more amazing is that we have more genetics because of those bacterial cells. And why would we have all that? And why would we have hundreds of species and a wide diversity, and even among those thousands of subspecies? Why would they be there? It's a symbiotic relationship. They get their livelihood, so to speak, from us. We give them a place to live, but we have co-evolved with them. So they're doing lovely things like helping us decide if we're hungry. They're helping digest our food. They're helping assimilate it. The bulk of our immune system is in the gut, and whether or not the critters there are sending the right signals to our immune system and building the right selective antibiotics have a lot to do with whether or not we survive whatever the latest news is about a contaminated food or whatever disease is going around. They affect our mood. It's difficult. The hard part of writing that book was knowing when to stop.
Right. It almost needs to be like a digital book that changes every month with the new findings.
I looked at probably 1,000 studies, and I kept coming up, not with contradictions of what I'd seen before, but whole new avenues of things that are being looked at. So I'm really thrilled because at long last, they're getting the respect that they deserve, and maybe we won't so wantonly kill them with medications, and maybe we'll start paying attention to whether GMO foods maybe are hard on our gut bacteria. Is anybody even asking those questions?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, let's look at some of the stressors on our gastrointestinal flora. You mentioned, high carbohydrate foods, chemicalized foods, of course, holiday season, lots of alcohol, that too, can modify, suppress, alter our intestinal flora. What are some of the other things that we do to mess things up?
They don't like stress. Stress messes everything up, as we always, any complaint that we have, one of the risk factors, you'll always see stress in there somewhere. They do like exercise, by the way.
The gut-brain interaction, we know that the good flora help with mood, but in other words, a bad mood or bad attitude or stress can actually change the composition of the intestinal bacteria?
Yes. And how, because when we have an emotion, it creates chemicals. And so anytime we're changing the environment for our good bacteria, it will suppress some and allow others to be encouraged. It's a very much a two-way street, the gut-brain axis. We're learning more and more about what goes on in the gut, how it affects the brain and helps us manage stress and so on. But we have energetics, all kinds of levels of health that we're just now thinking about looking at from the standpoint of orthodox medicine. But everything we do affects them for good or ill. Just look at what's in the water. They take out some poisons and they put some in to kill what? Bacteria.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like we're drinking a chlorinated swimming pool every time we have a glass of municipal water.
Yeah. Well, we're killing the bacteria that would have been in the water, but we're also putting at risk the ones in our gut. So I don't think anybody should drink tap water, even if it's well rated like it is in New York City, mm-hmm. In the town where I live. it's according to government standards, which just do not take into account even how many antibiotics have leached into the water supply or how many psychoactive medications are in there. All of those kinds of things can have a negative effect. You mentioned the chemicals in the food. That's a problem. Even the emulsifiers. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things at the Harvard lecture was just looking at some of the effects, for example, of smoked meats. We know smoked meats and processed meats, they have a bad effect. We aren't too sure why. Well, I think we're finding out it's because they're hard on our good bacteria, and then we miss out on all of the benefits we would have had from them.
Wow. So, you know, there's a phenomenon that I have heard about, and then I began to see in my patients was something along the lines of the candida made me do it. You know, patients would say, well, you know, when I have candida, I just have all these crazy food cravings. And I go, well, you know, yeah, blame it on the candida. Maybe that's just a failure of your willpower. But it actually turns out modern science now tells us that there is a connection between, as you said earlier, between appetite, cravings, and the bacteria that inhabit our gut. It's almost like they commandeer us. They take us over like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Yeah. Get us to go for those cupcakes and, sugary drinks.
That's one of those, when the cravings are the kind that you feel like, if I don't get that, I might die. That's one of two things. My experience usually is very low blood sugar, and it is a survival mechanism, or the yeast in your system know what they need. They secrete chemicals that make you think you need it too. Mm-hmm. So when they say the candida made me do it, they really did mean that, and it takes some weaning off of the sugar. And on another show, we could talk some more about the yeast, but it is not something you can snap your fingers and make it go away.
Wow. Okay. So, all these important implications, and, you can read about it in the soon-to-be-released book, The Probiotic Cure. By the way, when's the book coming out? We'll get you back on to highlight that.
Well, they are finally typesetting it, and so I'm guessing, as slow as things go, probably about the first of the year.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, well, we'll get you back on after the holidays, perhaps, and we can reprise it because there's lots to talk about. So what do you do? How do you cultivate a healthy microbiome?
Well, I think the first thing we have to do is, to the best of our ability, stop killing them off. And the overuse of antibiotics is certainly high on the list, because when a person has, sometimes you just have to have an antibiotic. That being the case, be prepared to try to repair the damage they've done for at least 6 months. You can't eat a couple of tubs of yogurt the next week and say, oh, well, now everything's okay, because we really need the diversity. In a few weeks, the bulk of bacteria come back, but we've disrupted the diversity, and so we don't have the same kind of menu and amounts of the certain bacteria that we had before. And so they're very specialized. So that's important. And all medications really are hard on our bacteria.
Do we have it nailed down? Because, you know, there are actually some studies now that suggest that this or that or the other strain, one may be good for irritable bowel syndrome, another may be good for diarrhea, another may be good for constipation, another may be good for preventing urinary tract infections, another may be good for vaginitis. Some one species stimulates your immune system, and another may even help you lose weight. Do we have it nailed down to the point where we can go for like a very targeted intervention with probiotics?
If we want to use them like medicines, there's starting to be that kind of information. If you want to just target that one problem, but most problems get better if you restore a good diversity and a good healthy amount of generally good bacteria like lactobacillus. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons I even after all of that research, I still very much like a particular probiotic because it tends to float all the boats. It doesn't pick winners and losers or flood the body with a whole lot of one bacteria, which isn't restoring the diversity.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's the idea is more like if you have a weed patch and you want to turn it into a verdant forest, you actually want to create an ecosystem. You don't want to just plant just pine trees, for example. You probably want to create the elements for a restored ecosystem of cooperative interacting bacteria.
Well, exactly. It's what we're doing is analogous to mowing down the rainforest with all of the bazillions of different species that are there and planting corn, mm-hmm. which is yeah. not a, well, it's not a good trade-off.
It's a lack of biodiversity. In other words, when they study healthy indigenous tribes who have an absence of cardiovascular disease, an absence of, many of our modern diseases, autoimmune diseases and so on, they find that the big difference in the microbiome is not one species, but that they have more biodiversity, sort of like comparing the Amazon to, a toxic fun site,
Yeah. Well, it is that indeed. And there are differences for cultures. If you're a hunter-gatherer and you eat a whole lot of very fibrous foods, your gut is going to have more of the bacteria that help you break that down because humans aren't very good at that. They don't make the enzymes for it. So in general, to get back to your main question about how do we protect them, we feed them good food. We try to avoid chemical additives and processed foods. And it's nice that happens to be the same prescription for preventing diabetes or heart disease or cancer or Alzheimer's. Stay off of the refined sugars and so on. That helps them as well. But eating fermented foods and a variety of them, because you get not only the actual bacteria, but also what they produce, which back in 2007, I coined the term postbiotics because I couldn't find anything else that seem to make sense. That you have your prebiotics, which is what you feed the bacteria. The probiotics are the bacteria. Postbiotics are what's left of them and all the stuff they've made.
Hmm. Yeah. Could you elaborate on that? Because this is actually a new term for me. I know about prebiotics, but postbiotics are the metabolites of the bacterial fermentation, or what?
Yes. Yeah. And actually, years ago, I heard it said by somebody named Dr. Ron Hoffman that and that's what started me thinking in this direction, that what's in a really excellent whole food type probiotic, it might be those chemicals that they've made might be the most important part. Mm. And at first I thought, well, that's kind of an odd thought, but the more I looked into it, they make very specific selective antibiotics that don't kill their friends and good neighbors, mm-hmm. only the bad guys, make organic acids, a lot of which we don't really even know what they do yet.
These short-chain fatty acids that actually may nourish the cells that line our intestinal tract and help them grow and repair.
Yes, and be more energetic, and they make signaling compounds. There are signals that come from their cell walls and from their DNA, so even after they've passed away, they're still doing some good. They make enzymes to help digest a wide variety of foods that we need help with. They make vitamins, and some things that we have yet to identify, but it's not their presence so much. The bacteria can sit there and just do one thing. If they don't make these, if they aren't little chemical factories, the main thing that they do to help us is they take up space that would be used by a bad bacteria. They crowd out yeast and that kind of thing. But the main benefit is what they manufacture for us.
Mm-hmm. And a word that is used scientifically for this is what is bacteriocins. Bacteriocins. And so define that term for us.
That's the selective antibiotics. They they act in the same way that antibiotic medications that we take, but those are just like a flamethrower. The drugs kill everything in sight. They don't take names and say, oh, I think I'll just go after this one and not that one. The bacteria know who the enemy is, and they want to get rid of pathogens. So they have very sophisticated, specific bacteriocins that they make.
Bacteriocins, okay. Yeah, I didn't even get the pronunciation. The word is so new. So, okay, so we know, for example, that if we are programmed from birth to have, quote, good bacteria, the passage of the baby through the birth canal guarantees the inoculation of the baby with healthy bacteria that actually can do all these things, but also fight against the invasion of harmful bacteria. So if you don't get that inoculation, actually these days doctors who do C-sections sometimes take a little, almost like a little turkey baster and take some fluid from the birth canal and apply it to the baby's nose, face, mouth to inoculate the baby as if the baby went through the tract. This is very important, right?
Oh, I actually didn't know that they were doing that, but God bless them.
I happen to know this because my daughter-in-law is actually, she's getting ready to be induced maybe in a very few hours. And, you know, they went through all this preparatory stuff. You know, they get them, like, tell them what to do. And, you know, she's a little bit high risk. She's a little older. And, you know, so they're saying, well, you might need a C-section. And they said, but don't worry. In the C-section, we're going to take care of that very important thing. We want your child to have optimal immunity. And so we're going to inoculate him. We know it's a boy, with the good bacteria that's so important to get the right start.
That's wonderful, because otherwise they tend to acquire hospital bacteria,
yeah,
and that's where the worst ones go to live.
Or the superficial skin bacteria from the woman, which is not the right flora to start with. It's a different population.
No. And one thing I learned in writing the book is that the womb was previously thought to be sterile. Now we know that's not true.
Not even in utero, not even before the birth process.
Exactly. And the fact that the other part, and I hope that they'll watch out for this too, because they're cutting the woman open, antibiotics are almost always given prophylactically before,
sure,
afterwards, and then if the baby gets antibiotics, you can see the difference for years to come. They're more likely to be sickly, they're more likely to be overweight, mm-hmm, and so on.
Well, we're hoping for a natural birth. All right. So this good introduction to this very, very important field, and this is so much to learn here. This completes part one of today's podcast. It's a logical point at which to break. And when we return in part two with today's guest, Marty Wittekin, we're going to talk about some practical solutions. We'll talk a little bit about prebiotics, the right kinds of foods. We'll also talk about the different probiotic options out there. And Marty has some very specific views on what constitutes the optimal probiotic. So stay tuned for that. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.